Americans everywhere are enjoying their Sundays after successfully completing Mother's Day in less than 20 minutes this morning. Dads were able to wrap up breakfast in bed by 9:18 a.m., giving them plenty of time to mill about the garage for the rest of the afternoon. While children who spent a minute and a half this morning hugging their mothers are currently out playing street hockey. And after completely fulfilling their Mother's Day obligations with a store-bought card, teens are now free to leave and spend the day with their friends. The moms, who were quickly and efficiently lavished with cards, flowers, assurances of love, and 7 full minutes of family togetherness, praised the competency with which the holiday was carried out.
Oh, it was great. Charles and the kids made me feel completely appreciated, but they ended the holiday before I even got out of bed. Guess I'll go water the plants now.
But before the day-long celebration concluded early this morning, moms had their own job to do, making a brief, obligatory phone call to their own mothers. Coming up next, the NRA unveils their new plan to send guns to school while locking children into protective safes.
You're so fat they have to jack you up to take off your shoes.
Yeah, well, you're so skinny your eyes are in single file.
Well, you're so ugly your ears stick out to get away from your face.
Well, your mama is
so... Hold it, wait a minute. Don't bring anyone mother into this. She ain't here. If it wasn't for your mother, you wouldn't be here. So remember, when you put down one mother, you put down mothers all over the world.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're gonna stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
I have 422 friends, yet I'm lonely. I speak to all of them every day, yet none of them really know me. The problem I have sits in the spaces between, looking into their eyes or at a name on a screen. I took a step back and opened my eyes. I looked around and realised that this media we call social is anything but when we open our computers and it's our doors we shut. All this technology we have, it's just an illusion. Community companionship, a sense of inclusion, yet when you step away from this device of delusion, you awaken to see a world of confusion. A world where we're slaves to the technology we mastered, where information gets sold by some rich, greedy bastard. A world of self-interest, self-image, self-promotion, where we all share our best bits, but leave out the emotion. We're at our most happy with an experience we share. But is it the same if no one is there? Be there for your friends, and they'll be there too, but no one will be if a group message will do. We edit and exaggerate, crave adulation. We pretend not to notice the social isolation. We put our words into order until our lives are glistening. We don't even know if anyone is listening. Being alone isn't a problem. Let me just emphasize, if you read a book, paint a picture, or do some exercise, you're being productive and present, not reserved and recluse. You're being awake and attentive and putting your time to good use. So when you're in public and you start to feel alone, put your hands behind your head, step away from the phone. You don't need to stare at your menu or at your contact list. Just talk to one another. Learn to coexist. I can't stand to hear the silence of a busy commuter train where no one wants to talk through the fear of looking insane. We're becoming unsocial. It no longer satisfies to engage with one another and look into someone's eyes. We're surrounded by children who, since they were born, have watched us living like robots and think it's the norm. It's not very likely you'll make world's greatest dad if you can't entertain a child without using an iPad. When I was a child, I'd never be home. Be out with my friends on our bikes we would roam. I'd wear holes in my trainers and graze up my knees. We'd build our own clubhouse high up in the trees. Now the park's so quiet it gives me a chill. See no children outside and the swings hanging still. There's no skipping, no hopscotch, no church and no steeple. We're a generation of idiots, smartphones and dumb people. So look up from your phone, shut down the display. Take in your surroundings, make the most of today. Just one real connection is all it can take to show you the difference that being there can make. Be there in the moment that she gives you the look that you remember forever as when love overtook. The time she first holds your hand or first kiss your lips. The time you first disagree but still love her to bits. The time you don't have to tell hundreds of what you've just done because you want to share this moment with just this one. The time you'll sell your computer so you can buy a ring for the girl of your dreams who is now the real thing. The time you want to start a family and the moment when you first hold your little girl and get to fall in love again. The time she keeps you up at night and all you want is rest, and the time you wipe away the tears as your baby flees the nest. The time your baby girl returns with a boy for you to hold, and the time he calls you granddad and makes you feel real old. The time you take in all you've made just by giving life attention, and how you're glad you didn't waste it by looking down at some invention. The time you hold your wife's hand, sit down beside her bed, you tell her that you love her, lay a kiss upon her head. She then whispers to you quietly, as her heart gives a final beat, that she's lucky she got stopped by that lost boy in the street. But none of these times ever happened. You never had any of this. When you're too busy looking down, you don't see the chances you miss. So look up from your phone, shut down those displays. We have a finite existence, a set number of days. Don't waste your life getting caught in the net, as when the end comes, nothing's worse than regret. I'm guilty too of being part of this machine, this digital world we are heard but not seen, where we type as we talk and we read as we chat, where we spend hours together without making eye contact. So don't give in to a life where you follow the hype. Give people your love, don't give them your like. Disconnect from the need to be heard and defined. Go out into the world, leave distractions behind. Look up from your phone, shut down that display. Stop watching this video, live life the real way.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
This is Bill Downs in the State Department Auditorium in Washington, where CBS News brings you a special broadcast of the first news conference ever held by an American astronaut. Commander Alan Shepard shortly will tell for the first time in public how it feels to be shot 115 miles skyward at a speed of 5,100 miles per hour to become America's first man in space. The 37-year-old Navy commander is accompanied by his six fellow astronauts who are scheduled to follow him into space at some later date. The State Department Auditorium here is a new one where President Kennedy holds his news conferences about every week. It's jammed with reporters from all over the world. In fact, President Kennedy never drew a crowd like this. Also attending the conference and sitting in a place of honor in front of the auditorium are Commander Shepard's parents, Colonel and Mrs. Alan Shepard Sr. of Derry, New Hampshire, his wife's parents, Mr. and Mrs. Russell Brewer of Kennett Springs, Pennsylvania, and the astronaut's sister, Mrs. Gordon Sherman of Attleboro, Massachusetts. Earlier today, Shepard received the NASA Distinguished Service Medal from President Kennedy, who incidentally dropped it, and the astronaut made a surprise visit to the National Association of Broadcasters. But now the astronauts are coming in, receiving a big hand from this hard-bitten crowd of reporters. Commander Shepard has not yet made an appearance. He is to be accompanied by James E. Webb, the administrator. Yes, there he is now. And here is Administrator of the National Aeronautics and Space Agency, James E. Webb, who will introduce the astronauts.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The historic Project Mercury flight on last Friday was a dramatic demonstration before the eyes of the world of how the United States space team, through effective, large-scale, organized effort, can pass one very important milestone on the long road toward the mastery of the space environment by man. Symbolic of the successful solution of every problem and the accomplishment of every necessity to earn the Navy well done, or the NASA A-OK, is the man you desire to question, Alan B. Shepard, Jr. In fact, today, I think we can all say, it's Alan A. O.K. But before you ask your questions, let me give you a figure or two to indicate what it means to ride a rocket. A chronology published by the Congress shows that with respect to the V-2 rocket in Germany in 1942, out of 7 launchings, only 1 succeeded. In 1943, out of 24, only 4 succeeded. After thousands of launches during the war, the record of the V-2 rockets built in the United States left much to be desired. With respect to the Jupiter rocket, out of the first 10 launchings, 7 succeeded. Out of the second 10, 8 succeeded. And out of the last 4, everyone succeeded. And with respect to the Thor rocket, out of the first 10, 4 succeeded. After 40 firings of Thor, the next 10, that is from 40 to 50, all succeeded. And with respect to the Atlas rocket, out of the first 10, 5 succeeded. Out of the 10 from 20 to 30, all succeeded. But out of the 10 from 40 to 50, 6 succeeded and 4 failed. With respect to the Polaris rocket, out of the first 10, 5 succeeded. Out of the 10 from 40 to 50, 7 succeeded. But out of the 10 from 70 to 80, 9 succeeded. The lesson is clear. If we are to have our spectacular successes openly arrived at with ever larger and ever more complex rockets, the early test flights, unmanned of course, will involve some spectacular failures. In the drama of the countdown, we will never know which it is to be. But to keep perspective, I should tell you that, as we did in planning Project Mercury, this lack of rocket perfection will be taken into account in manned flights by providing an escape system for the astronaut in the event of the failure of the rocket. In thrust, the first stage of Saturn is 20 times the Redstone, and we will test fly it this year. In thrust, the first stage of Nova is estimated at 100 times the Redstone, and we are already testing one of its engines. The complete Nova will likely measure 2/3 as tall as the Washington Monument. From all we know about the past, a portion of the early test flights of these gigantic rockets will appear as failures to those who view them and read about them. To the space scientist and engineer, however, they will provide the knowledge, the experimental proof of a technology as a nation we cannot fail to master and still survive. In the months ahead, when you see on your TV the launchings of the brave men who sit beside Alan Shepard here today, it may be well to remember this record. Even with our best efforts, no specific flight can be guaranteed absolutely safe. But from every flight comes more knowledge to advance our progress in space.
These stunning images of Earth have been captured through NASA's new space cameras. NASA tested out their new high-definition Earth viewing cameras during an experiment from the International Space Station. The 4 commercially available cameras were placed on the outside of the space station so they could stream live footage of Earth. To protect them from the harsh conditions of space, the cameras were enclosed in a temperature-controlled unit. This will also help tech engineers determine which cameras are the best to use on future missions as they analyze the effects of space on video quality. NASA also said US high schools helped to design some of the cameras' components.
After decades of searching the cosmos, today NASA announced that what it was really looking for was right here on planet Earth all along.
For years, we've foolishly chased after comets, moons, and stars. Outer space may be beautiful, but it's not as beautiful as the smile of a child, nor as sublime as a good bottle of wine shared among friends. Our search ends where it began, here, on this big blue marble.
Astronomers say that while their telescopes were pointing at Mars, they never even noticed the planet that was right in front of them. NASA now plans to appreciate what they already have. The agency's latest report, entitled Wonder is Everywhere, Finding the Beauty in the Everyday, calls for further study of the little things that truly give life meaning.
Warm rain on a summer day. The smell of pine trees, touching the worn paper of your favorite book, that's what's always made us happy. Not some asteroid a million miles away.
NASA has now canceled all of its space research programs and is diverting its $17 billion budget toward experiencing something new every day. NASA, however, has made clear that it doesn't regret anything it's done, saying, quote, "We'll always treasure going to the moon. Even though we were two ships passing in the night, NASA will always remember that magical day in the summer of '69.
Looking for the perfect world. perfect world. Looking for the perfect world. Looking for the perfect world.
Finds 56% of voters think the country is better off than it was four eons ago. A brutally honest new Revlon ad campaign reminds customers you can't change who you are, and a bodybuilder's veins are now outside of his skin. Bolder, sleeker, and three times as powerful as your father ever was, this is The Onion Week in Review. An alarming UN report on magical realism released this week warns of increased incidences of women's tears flooding the entire world. A UN committee linked the catastrophic phenomena to matronly widows, commonly named Tita and Esmeralda, who wept for up to 90 days on end about their estranged lovers.
Just consider how detrimental it is to a nation's workforces to have thousands of its plantation overseers simply disappear one night into the midsummer fog, only to return decades later without having aged a single day. Put simply, if such phenomena are not immediately halted, the effects on the international community will be catastrophic.
The nation's limo drivers spent a magical prom night playing scratch-off tickets in the parking lot this week. According to sources, chauffeurs nationwide began their enchanting evening by cramming swank magazines into their glove compartments before dropping off their students at a school gym, working through a stunning assortment of lotto cards, and dining upon a wide range of microwave-heated taquitos from a nearby 7-Eleven. A study published this week found that most serial killers developed their homicidal tendencies after not receiving a toy each time they asked for one as children.
The first time I remember having the urge to kill was when I was 8, right after my parents wouldn't buy me the Omega Hyperwarp. I remember my dad saying, "Not now, son." And then I went straight home, took the cat out into the garage and peeled off its skin. The release was extraordinary.
And in this week's local news, puberty is absolutely teen off on an area teen. In other news, the nation's sisters issue their annual report on how to deal with dad. A newborn is soothed by the familiar sound of its parents' bickering.
There are known knowns. There are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know.
I'm not going to be scrambling jets to get a 29-year-old hacker.
That was President Obama during Edward Snowden's global odyssey after he revealed those surveillance secrets.
Known knowns.
And a year later, Snowden still sparks a raging debate. Here's ABC's Pierre Thomas.
Edward Snowden is a traitor and could be a spy, recruited by Russia to target the U.S.
Congressman Rupert
That's
Berger
the suspicion of the man who was running the NSA when the breach happened last year.
Why would you take tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or a million plus documents?
And Snowden acknowledged the extraordinary scale of what he could have taken.
I had access to, you know, the full rosters of everyone working at the NSA, the entire intelligence community, and undercover assets all around the world.
Is he a spy?
I don't know the answer to that.
Known unknowns.
I am concerned that where he is now, he is at least influenced by Russia. The real question, and we don't know an answer to, is how far back did that go?
Unknown unknowns.
We have learned that the Obama administration quietly accessed the phone records of millions and millions of Americans.
Roughly a year ago, Snowden, who had been working at the NSA as a contractor, stole some of the nation's most sensitive secrets and gave them to the media. The first stunning revelation, Verizon was providing the National Security Agency with phone records of millions of customers.
Known knowns.
Now, according to Alexander, nations have our surveillance playbook and terrorists have changed how they operate.
We're losing capabilities to track terrorists. This is a huge impact.
But Snowden, now in exile in Russia, last summer defended his actions.
I don't want to live in a world where everything that I say, everything I do, everyone I talk to, every expression of creativity or love or friendship is recorded.
For his supporters, Snowden's revelations changed the world as we know it. They say for the better.
We have the courts engaging the legality and the wisdom of these programs. We have the Congress conducting oversight. Yeah, that debate would never have happened but for the actions of Edward Snowden.
And we've pressed Alexander on why Congress, which was supposed to be overseeing his agency, did not know everything the NSA was doing.
Was that a case of the NSA withholding information from them or Congress not doing their job? It can't be both.
Here's my straightforward answer. We deal through the Intel committees. We put all those documents on the table and said, here's what we're going to do with this. But I can tell you this, that we provided those materials. Now, truth in lending, some of this is technical.
The debate is over the details. Was the NSA revealing too few or Snowden too many?
Known unknowns.
For this week, Pierre Thomas, ABC News, Washington.
Thanks, Pierre. Let's bring in ABC News contributor Richard Clark, former senior White House counterterrorism advisor and author of the new book, Sting of the Drone. Thanks for being with us, Dick. And I want to ask you, you heard what General Alexander said. Do you think that Edward Snowden damaged national security?
I know he did.
Known knowns.
President Obama appointed me to the five-person review group to look into what happened. And we had complete access to NSA. I know that he hurt our counterterrorism effort and various other efforts. And
give us an example how he did that, or the effect rather.
Well, he may or may not have intended. We don't know.
Known unknowns.
But he revealed ways that NSA collects information, and the terrorists and others, criminals and others around the world, have stopped using those methods of communication since he revealed them. And so we no longer have the heads up that an attack is coming on our embassy and fill in the blank because of what he did. Sure, he revealed a program, the telephony program, the 215 program, that was a stupid program.
Known knowns.
Now, that we might not have known about otherwise.
Unknown unknowns.
And I'm glad we know
about it. So if there's a silver lining, that's it.
But it's a pretty small silver lining. I'm glad we know about the program. We're killing the program because it was unnecessary and overly intrusive, and it didn't have enough oversight by the courts. And so the president is killing the program. That's what we recommended.
I want to turn to your book, which sounds pretty phenomenal. It's called The Sting of the Drone, and one reviewer had high praise, writing what Tom Clancy did for submarines, Richard A. Clark does for drones. What's the picture you're trying to paint here with the drones? I'm sure you didn't reveal any secrets.
I couldn't, because they all reviewed it and took out the secrets.
Known unknowns.
But they left a lot in that's very informative.
Known knowns.
The goal here, Martha, was to write a thriller that you would enjoy laying on the beach. And at the same time, bring people behind the curtain so they could actually see how our drone program works now and how potentially it's going to work in the future.
And you go to where the drones are flying, you go overseas, you do all of that.
And I ask the question, what happens if the people who we are attacking with the drones start attacking us with drones?
That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know.
And if we do, then I guarantee you, I agree with you, although why don't I talk about it later, because I'm just about to finish. You and me, we'll talk about it, all right? I'm going to be coming around. There you go. I agree with you. I want to hear from you. I love you back. You kind of screwed up my ending, but that's okay. That's okay. And we've got free speech in this country.
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
Close call in the skies over Florida, where a commercial airliner and a drone nearly collided. Our aviation correspondent Renee Marsh is joining us. Renee, what happened?
Well, Wolf, this is simply stunning. It appears this is the closest a passenger jet and a drone have ever come in the sky. Sources tell CNN the plane was a U.S. Airways regional jet flying near Tallahassee, Florida airport. Now, the pilot of the plane tells authorities he saw what he believes was a fixed-wing drone. The drone was some 2,300 feet in the air, far higher than something that an amateur might be flying. And the pilot says it was painted in camouflage. Now, the pilot also told authorities it came so close that he thought he had actually hit this drone. But once they got on the ground, they did not see any damage. U.S. Airways just told CNN that they are aware of the reports. They are investigating. But, you know, this really could have been catastrophic. What may be more concerning, though, Wolf, is that this happened in March and was never publicly reported until an FAA official told people at a special drone conference on Thursday. Wolf?
That's pretty shocking. I don't know why we didn't know about that earlier. How catastrophic could it have been, Renee?
Well, you saw what happened when a flock of geese, you saw what that happened or what problems that caused for that U.S. Airways flight known as Miracle on the Hudson. Well, just imagine a drone getting sucked up in one of the plane's engines. Again, Wolf, in that own FAA official's own words, it could have really been catastrophic there.
All right, so what could be done to fix this problem?
Well, you know, over the next 5 years, the FAA is estimating that as many as 7,500 drones could be flying in the U.S. airspace at any given time. So there's some urgency in figuring out how to safely integrate these drones with the airspace. We do know that the FAA has been working on a plan to safely integrate drones into the airspace so that you don't have incidents where you have passenger aircrafts crashing into drones that are also sharing that same space.
Spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You may have heard of flying drones, but have you heard of flying trucks? Well, say hello to the new multi-copter named the Black Knight Transformer. Developed with funding from the U.S. military, it's designed to carry supplies into hostile environments and evacuate injured soldiers from the battlefield. It's also capable of flying at much higher altitudes than this shown, with payloads of more than 4,000 pounds. After landing, it folds up its propellers and transforms into a supply truck so it can navigate over rough terrain. Oh, looks pretty cool there. And get this, the Transformer can be attached to a boat hull, making it perfect for missions on land and sea. So in the future, if you find yourself in a no man's land somewhere, you might see the Black Knight buzzing up over to pick you up. Who knows?
Unknown. Unknowns.
For 13 years now, these have been the sights and sounds of war. But with every helicopter mission and every damaged Humvee to return from the Afghan theater, there is another sound. One Congress is increasingly paying attention to. After a decade of war, lawmakers are tightening their grasp on the purse strings, decreasing the minimum defense budget for 2014 to $500 billion and demanding accountability. Not an easy mission.
The Pentagon is the only agency that cannot produce a budget that can be audited and presented to the American people. Every other agency passes those tests in terms of financial audits.
In fact, the Department of Defense has never been audited, even though the DOD completes over 150 million financial transactions a year and makes up one-fifth of federal spending.
It should have happened many years ago, so too with the Department of Homeland Security, which also hasn't been audited. It's ludicrous that it's our taxpayer money and the DOD can't account for it.
Fiscal hawks like Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma have been attempting to force the Pentagon's hand for years.
Now, unlike previous bills, which offered incentives to the DOD for getting its fiscal house organized, Coburn's 2013 Audit the Pentagon Act would have punished the military if it did not comply. However, that bill is still sitting in committee. The Pentagon's new plan is to have its books audit ready by 2017. However, critics say that even that seems like a stretch.
There are reasons why this isn't happening. Certainly the lack of campaign finance reform in Congress, allowing contractors to kind of have a stranglehold on both Congress and the Pentagon to prevent this audit from happening, because it would incriminate them, but it would also incriminate the Pentagon employees that are abusing the money.
At least one part of the military has its financial books in order. The Marine Corps was successfully audited on December 23rd of last year.
The Marine Corps was audit ready last year, so plus for the Marine Corps. It took a lot of doing to get that, but Marine Corps is one of the smaller services. We've just made those advancements in the Corps that allowed us to be audit ready.
However, that military branch makes up only 6% of the overall budget, receiving $29 billion for all of 2014. One of the main arguments as to why Congress has not forced the Pentagon to comply is the idea that the agency is simply too big to audit.
It is very complex, but to throw up our hands and say, well, it's too big, we can't worry about it, that would be surrender, and we shouldn't do that.
And while former Congressman Ron Paul is now out of office, his senator son is taking up the cause.
National defense is the most important thing we spend money on. It's one of the few legitimate constitutional functions. It should be a priority. It doesn't mean a blank check.
But even if Congress did force an audit, tracking the records on the Pentagon's antiquated computer systems would be a nightmare. A recent Reuters investigation found that the computer systems were built in the 1970s and have no way of communicating with one another. Attempts to update the record system have caused more issues. Even former Defense Secretary Robert Gates has lamented over the complex business practices of the Pentagon.
The current apparatus for managing people and money across the DOD enterprise is woefully inadequate. The agency's field activities, joint headquarters, and support staff functions of the department operate as a semi-feudal system, an amalgam of fiefdoms without centralized mechanisms to allocate resources, track expenditures, and measure results relative to the department's overall priorities.
According to one estimate from the office of Senator Coburn, if the Department of Defense can get its books in order, it could result in $25 billion in savings each year for the next 10 years by eliminating inefficiencies and streamlining spending. In the end, some say the true colors of the Pentagon will finally be shown when an audit does take place.
It would expose the military-industrial complex and how the negotiations go on and exactly who gets the benefits and why.
It's hard to know what we will find, exactly how much money can be saved, and whether anything should be changed until the Pentagon finally lets auditors past its barriers.
This is a letter from God to man. It says, "Hey there, how's it going? Long time no see. I know I haven't been around much lately, but it didn't seem like you wanted me to be. The last time I sent down a message, you nailed it to the cross, so I figured I'd just leave you to it, let you be your own boss. But I've been keeping an eye on you, I have, and it's amazing how you've grown. All your technological advances and the problems you've overthrown. All the beautiful art you've created with such grace and such finesse. But I must admit there are a few things I'm afraid have impressed me less. So I'm writing to apologise for horrors committed in my name. Although it was never what I intended, I feel I should take my share of the blame. Not the good I've tried to was corrupted when organised religion got into full swing. What I thought were quite clear messages were taken to unusual extremes. My teachings were taken out of context to meet the agendas of others. Interpretations taken in different ways, hidden meanings discovered. Religion became a tool for the weak to control the strong. With all these new morals and ethics, survival of the fittest was gone. No longer could the biggest man simply take whatever he needed, cause damnation was the price. If certain rules were not heeded, some of the deeds committed in my name made me wonder I went wrong. Back at the start when I created this, the foundation seemed so strong. See, all the elements were already here. Long before I began, I just kind of put them all together. I didn't really think of a long-term plan. I made the sun an appropriate distance, laid the stars across the sky, so you could navigate this globe, or watch a sunrise. I covered the earth with plants and fruit, some for sustenance, some for beauty. Made the sunshine and clouds rain, so their maintenance wasn't your duty. Try to give each creature own attributes, about making them developed. Gave you all your own space to grow, in your own way space to develop. I didn't know that such developments were called rifts and jealousy, caused you to war against each other. Leave marks this planet indelible. But you see, I wasn't the creator, I was more the curator of nature. And I'm stepping straight with homosexuals right now. I don't hate ya. I was a simple being that happened to be the first to use such powers. But I just laid the ground. It was you that built the towers. It was you that invented bombs and the fear that comes with them. It was you that invented money and the corrupt economic systems. You invented terms like just war and terms like friendly fire. It was you that didn't know when to stop digging, when to stop building higher. It was you that exhausted the resources I carefully laid out on this earth.
War. There's not enough war going on, all right? War profiteers are getting angry. The contractors, the military contractors are scared. And honestly, what do we stand for? if not a healthy and robust war profiteering. That's our thing here in America. War profiteering is to us what running fast is to Usain Bolt, or what Dennis Rodman is to diplomacy, right? War profiteering is our thing. What else do we have? It's like Rihanna, NASCAR, and Game of Thrones. That's it. So we need more war. Bill Kristol said so himself. You know Bill Kristol. He's the conservative neocon think tanker. And neocon stands for neo-Nazi Decepticon. I think I have that right. He said so himself. In his panic to make sure we're still building and using lots of weapons, he said, a war-weary public can be awakened and rallied. Indeed, events are right now doing the awakening. All that's needed is the rallying, and the turnaround can be fast. He's saying that gearing up the U.S. public for killing is not that big a deal. It's kind of like getting everyone to sing God Bless America at a professional wrestling event. You know, at first everyone's thinking, I don't know if I really want to do this. I mean, we're about to watch gigantic beasts of burdens, grotesque men wrap their thighs around other grotesque men while growling. This isn't really a time for national pride, but then it quickly spreads, and a few minutes later, every single person in that arena is going, God bless America! Land that I love. But the question is where? Where would we go to war? We've already bombed the shit out of a lot of places. What's left? Africa. We've never done anything to disturb Africa before, right? Ever? Once? Sorry about the whole slave ship thing. According to a recent article in Alternet, we're already there. The U.S. has been building a constellation of drone bases across Africa, flying intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance missions out of not only Niger, but also Djibouti, Ethiopia, and others. Meanwhile, an air base in the capital of Burkina Faso serves as the home of the Joint Special Operations Air Detachment. But you can't find out that information from anywhere. You ask the Pentagon what's going on, and they're like, we don't even know what you're talking about. Never even heard of it. What's Africa? So the only way to find out that information is by looking at where the military contractors are getting their willies waxed. It's Africa. So the question is, why don't they stop this shit? Just stop it. Just stop the endless war. Why not give peace a something something? I'll tell you why. It's because it's all they've ever known. It's all they've ever done is war. It's how they make their money. It's how they put their kids through college. It's even how they get laid. All right, you can see it in the bars around Washington, D.C. Guys just going up to girls. Hey, baby, you ever screwed somebody with their finger on the button? Yeah, pretty adventurous. Not the button, but a button. All they ever do is plan to blow shit up, then blow shit up, then plan what to do after blowing shit up. It's all they know. You take that away from them, and they're like a retired NFL player, all right? They're just fat, overweight, spend all their money waddling around, signing autographs at Walmart for $5 a pop. But the difference between an NFL player and a war hawk is that at least an NFL player has their body to tell them when to quit. Their knees say to them, hey, fuck this, all right, I'm out. I can't, you're 350 pounds trying to tell me to run around. Go fuck yourself. With a war hawk, no one ever tells them to quit. And if someone did, they'd be like, but I'm really good at this. I'm really good at devastating entire populations. What, you take this away from me, what the fuck am I going to do? Huh? Model airplanes? Bingo at the community center? Paint the shed? No. All right. I am planning a strategic pivot to military engagement in Africa, and I know exactly what I'm doing. I watched The Lion King twice.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. In the jungle, the quiet jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. Peaceful village, the lions sleep tonight.
darling, don't fear my darling, the lion sleeps tonight.
Hush my darling, don't fear my darling, the lion sleeps tonight. Oh.
Biggest health problems these days is an invisible one. Electromagnetic chaos is becoming exponential in our society. I actually believe it's the number one threat to human health because these harmful EMF waves are not compatible with organic human functionality. So our biology, our physiology is being affected oftentimes without our knowledge, and because the waves are invisible, it goes unseen. There are some people that are more sensitive to this than others, and they can actually feel the waves affecting their state of consciousness. And this is a good thing. So next time someone makes the ignorant statement, "You're too sensitive," tell them, "You know, maybe the problem is you're not sensitive enough." So many people lack empathy or emotional intelligence. That same ability to understand your own feelings and to understand other people as well will pay off for you in this situation, because most likely the higher your emotional intelligence, the more sensitive you'll be to harmful EMF or chemtrails. You'll be able to feel these things and listen to your body and listen to your intuition, which is ultimately a good defense mechanism. Therefore, it's not just the R-complex or the reptilian brain that protects you. It's also the right brain, the inner knowing, the ability to feel emotionally and physically, that can intuitively keep you out of harm's way and ultimately protect you. Not feeling enough is the problem, rather than being overly sensitive. Human nature itself is a good thing. People say, well, it's human nature to compete and to be violent and to basically be immoral and evil. No, that's a hack that happened along the way, and that hack has allowed us to place ourselves in a left brain prison. This has in turn caused people to be less sensitive to one another, to themselves, to be less sensitive to their own physiology, and to be skeptical of their own intuition and inner knowing. The dystopian movie Equilibrium is based on the premise that all war and all pain and all suffering comes from the ability to feel as human beings, which is an inversion. It's exactly opposite of the truth. The problem is the people that can't feel, and the psychopaths and sociopaths that have no human emotion and no ability to put themselves in someone else's shoes and feel their pain. Therefore, they have no problem with torture and waterboarding and treating other people and animals as if they were useless things to be discarded. Ultimately, the movie proves to be anti-totalitarian, but the only way they know to solve the problem, you'll find, is to shoot and kill the regime, which is simply replacing one totalitarian system and one violent system with another. But there is a silent, invisible, and peaceful revolution that can take place energetically, where we simply replace the system rather than worrying about destroying it. There are two types of people. There are creators and there are destroyers. There are people that vibrate with the creative energies of imagination and building new things. And then there are people that simply want to destroy because they feel competition and they want to be better than, and they need to break down other people in order to have that ego-led identification where they feel better than other people. In order to do that, they need to take out the competition. These are destroyers. So my claim is that our way out is not to destroy the destroyers or even destroy the system of the destroyers, but focus all of our energy into replacing the system with our own new system, and therefore taking away the power, letting it collapse under its own weight. That is a more effective and peaceful solution to this problem. So we have to be aware of the ace up the sleeve of the control system. It's the last vestige of protection for them before we actually attain real freedom. They're using people's sense of morality against them. I find the current system repugnant. I think it's wrong, immoral, unjust, and it's obvious. It's becoming more obvious every day. From the police state antics of the NSA spying to the subsequent restriction of human rights and personal freedoms to the squeeze of the financial system and the energy acquiescence and ultimate slavery that the monetary system creates. And of course, finally, the ultimate expression of human injustice, war after war after war that we are experiencing. So yes, I am morally opposed to the control system in place and the way that we are treating each other as human beings. And I'm sure you identify with that and feel that way as well. But there's a split and a division and an Hegelian dialectic to keep us from actually doing anything about it. There are people that believe we need a violent revolution to unseat this power. But the problem is, then you're playing to their vibrational frequency. Then you're in their wheelhouse. Then you're up against their war machine that they've built up, and you're a pop gun versus an entire army of high-tech stormtroopers and police state enforcers. You're also in danger of replacing one totalitarian system with another one. It just happens to be your totalitarian system. So in order to replace the system that you despise without becoming the very thing that you've always hated, we must be creators and not destroyers. If you're focusing on replacing the system with a new paradigm shift, the old system will collapse under its own weight. The seeds of destruction are built into this foundation of their own government. So don't let them use your own morality against you by tempting you to the dark side, so to speak. Because even though your morality is telling you that we need to have a different paradigm shift for humanity and that this one is unsustainable, you still might be focused on the problems of the current system rather than focusing all your human potential and all your creativity and all your imagination into creating a new system. The way that that starts is the same way that Gandhi took down an empire and got the independence of India back. It was through peaceful, non-violent, non-acquiescence. It was through non-compliance, but in a peaceful way. I'm not saying that there is no justification ever for violent action. If someone's taking violent action against you and you have not initiated any kind of conflict and yet they're threatening your life, you have the right to protect yourself. Absolutely. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about how do we actually come up with a better system? Well, we need to put our energy and focus into that replacement so that we are focused on the energy of creating rather than destroying. And I know we're up against Mordor, and I know that we're outgunned and outmanned, and I know that all the odds are against us, and I also know that I don't know all the answers. I simply am brainstorming one possible solution, but it's a beginning. It's a start, and I believe that sometimes big changes can come from very small beginnings. We should focus on drawing up communities. We're not trying to impose this structure on anyone else. We just find four or five like-minded people or families that want to get together in a small community. And little by little, we supplant the current system with our own system that has human justice, that has our own school system. We build this from the ground up, and we do it one community at a time. We move to the country and create four or five houses or a series of complexes, or maybe treehouse communities connected by suspension bridges. But we need to sit down with architects and sit down with city planners that believe that our current system is unsustainable and that we need a new one, and we need to get together. We can do this as a human race, but we can't get mired down into destroying the destroyers. I am not advocating being passive. I am not about sitting back and doing nothing. It takes a great deal of courage to be nonviolent. It takes a great deal of strength to be compassionate, and it requires us coming together rather than being divided. So get together with a few other people in this community that are like-minded, that believe what you believe, and create a new community based on ideals that are sustainable. I believe that we can do this if we focus on the resonance and frequency of love and compassion, understanding for other human beings, and we focus our energy on the creation of a system that is fair, a whole new quantum shift in human evolution by simply starting small and letting it grow into a movement. Much love and visualize peace.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
Or made out the way they lived was somehow sick and twisted, but simply pointed out reasons to get it together. Not shouting get a job, but just saying get better, 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 get better. Mother Capital is where I live. Little kids being raised by slightly bigger kids. Society seems unfazed that this is how it is, while I'm constantly amazed that this is how it is. They confuse love at first sight with lust at first light. It must have hurt, right, when trust first took flight. You're young, you've no rights, you long for new heights. But some of those nights more than love fights. Tops crop, skirts stop at the top of their thighs. And the boys got that hungry look in their eyes. They want to be grown up and have respect, you see. But they're acting uneducated sexually. I ain't saying be celibate. Go out and have your fun. But there's plenty you can do without impregnation. And there ain't nothing wrong at all with having children. Just build yourself a little before you try to build them. And get better, 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 get better. Get better, get better. I see small town syndrome growing in size. There's not a lot to do, so the kids, they decide to get drunk every night. A glazed eyes disguise, do drugs every night to hide from their lives. People getting off their faces for a quiet night in. Kids rolling around the streets, rowing and fighting. But it's all just because life ain't too exciting. And it's easier than trying to do the right thing. But there are other choices if you want them. You don't have to toe the line and just float with the flotsam. You can feel your time better when you find a passion. The internet and public services give free education, so it really ain't a case of rich or poor. It's a case of self-motivation and nothing more. Like Billy says, whether you have or you have not wealth, the system might fail you, but don't fail yourself. Just get better, 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 get better. Get better, get better, get better, get better.
Now, go find the others.com.
All in all, this has been a tough week. But we've seen the character of our country once more. And as president, I'm confident that we have the courage and the resilience and the spirit to overcome these challenges and to go forward as one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much, everybody.